This is Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, American sports and black athletes. Part 3, the black boss and the white player. Tonight's guest, player coach Bill Russell of the Boston Celtics, the first black man to boss a major league sports club. You speak for yourself and ask questions directly by calling Collect, Night Call's national phone number. Area code 212-749-3311 or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. We continue with our week-long examination of American sports and black athletes. With last week's issue, Jack Olson of Sports Illustrated concluded a remarkable five-part series called The Black Athlete, A Shameful Story. The first article began this way, and we quote, "Every morning, the world of sports wakes up and congratulates itself on its contribution to race relations. The litany has been repeated so many times that it is believed almost universally. It goes, look what sports has done for the black man. The cliché has been accepted by black and white, liberal and conservative, intellectual and redneck. If only we could achieve in housing, in education, in economic opportunity, all the things we have achieved in sports, says a typically grateful black leader, the race problem in the United States would disappear. But black athletes do not agree. Almost to a man, they are disillusioned, disgruntled, and dissatisfied. Black professional athletes say they are underpaid, shunted into certain stereotype positions and treated like subhumans by Paleolithic coaches who regard them as watermelon-eating idiots. Some agree that anyone with two eyes can see what sports has done for the black man and offer Willie Mays as Exhibit A. Where would Willie be without baseball? Chopping cotton? Or take Bill Russell, player coach of the Boston Celtics. He goes around making anti-white remarks and collecting a six-figure check for taking part in a game. That's part of Jack Olson's series on the black athlete that ended in last week's issue of Sports Illustrated. Take Bill Russell indeed. He is our guest tonight, and he is standing by in Los Angeles to answer your questions and share your comments and conversation about the black boss and the white player. You may speak to him direct on our national number by calling area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, you're always welcome to call us collect. That's national calls on 212-749-3311. In the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's local calls only at 866-5010. Mr. Russell, good evening.
Good evening.
And thank you for being with us. In another of his articles, Jack Olson singles out basketball as the one of the three major professional sports which has moved closest to integration. Since half its players are white and half are black, it represents the ultimate in integration. But even in basketball, there's more of an uneasy truce than equality, because the black man so dominates the sport, the old racial attitudes are kept well in check, but they were there and they die slowly. If they are dying, one of the major reasons is our guest tonight, a black man, and another reason is a white man, Red Auerbach, who appointed Bill Russell his successor as coach of the world champion Boston Celtics, the first black man to boss a major professional sports club. Later in the program, we'll have General Manager Pepper Wilson of the Cincinnati Royals as a special call-in guest for a view from the front office. But first, Bill Russell, what is it like where the action is? As a player coach, black boss over white and black players, do you have any trouble getting your white teammates to follow your orders?
No, not really. I wouldn't tolerate it anyway from anybody, black or white.
You have no discipline problem at all?
No, it's a matter of this. You have a job to do. If you do it, that's well. If you don't do it, you leave. And you see, I have the responsibility of the team, so we do it my way.
Do you carry any special burden in being a black coach?
Not that I ever... Well, I think that it's not exactly a burden. It's a sort of an irritant. And that, especially the first year I was coaching, when we traveled, we'd run into in hotels and things. They always looking for who's in charge. And they never could figure out that it was me. But we got that squared away,
What about within the league itself? I'm thinking in terms, maybe I should preface my question this way. In being first, they don't have a precedent to follow. They don't have anyone that they can compare you with. So what do they demand of you?
Well, you see, I'm a different type of fellow anyway, besides being black, in that I guess it's, they don't know what to expect from me, because that's the way I am, and I would, you know, I don't think that has much to do with the fact that I'm black. But I didn't encounter anything, I don't think. The reason I say I don't think is because I don't notice most things, you know. I have ideas of what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do, and that's what I do. So, and I've never particularly bothered what people thought about me anyway, so I'm not going to start at this age.
I would assume that being a coach calls for some special qualifications, some special leadership qualities. Did you think about being a coach when you were playing college ball?
Well, first, I won't exactly, I don't have to really agree with you on that first part, what is required to be a coach, because I think it's overplayed, for one thing. I think that you have to have, first of all, a fundamental knowledge of the game. And be a human being. What I mean by be a human being is treat people the way you want to be treated. In some cases, treat people the way they have to be treated to get the best out of them. You see what I mean by that? Some athletes, black and white, because to me, they're beneath all the rest of stuff, they're pretty much alike. The backgrounds are different. But some guys you have to yell at, and some guys you have to praise, and some guys you just leave alone. And this is one thing you find out. And other than that, fundamental knowledge of the game is no big deal, you know. So as for, you know, coaching to me, it's really, like I said, it's no big deal in that it's just kind of routine.
Well, had you thought about coaching when you were playing college ball?
College?
Right.
Oh, of course not. There were no black coaches any place, even dreamed of when I was in college outside the South, and I wasn't about to go back there and live.
But so, did you ever think that one day that you'd be tapped to coach a professional team?
No, it never occurred to me until Red asked me if I'd like the job of coaching. I never even thought about it. I thought about it, I didn't want to do it. But the situation was unique when the time came, because I couldn't think of anybody around that fitted into our thing. You know, the Celtics are, to me, a real special thing. And it's not just a playing for a team. The Celtics are a way of life, in a sense, because we pride ourselves on our togetherness and our winning tradition. And it's a thing that's been a part of Celtics for as long as there have been Celtics. They didn't always win, but they always had this togetherness. And I guess you would say it started with Walter Brown and Red Auerbach and Bob Cousy, who were the original big three of the Celtics. And they were all first-class people. So it's sort of a tradition. And so I couldn't say I thought about coaching before. Or I can't say I think about coaching after I leave the Celtics either. I couldn't imagine doing it anyplace else.
Do you foresee in the immediate future another black coach?
Well, you know, it's funny. I still think that I should have been the first black coach in basketball, in the National Basketball Association. It was involved with another team a few years back, Detroit Pistons. Earl Lloyd had been assistant coach, and he had played about 8 or 10 years in the league, and the coach either got fired or left, I don't remember. But anyway, he was the logical man to be the coach. as far as that's from the outside looking in. But instead of hiring him as a coach, they hired Dave DeBusschere, who'd only played a year and a half in the league. And he was still playing. You know, they talk about playing player coaches, and he was like 25 years old. He'd only played a year and a half. And they passed Earl Lloyd up to hire him, which was kind of inconsistent as far as I was concerned.
Is Earl still playing?
Who?
Is Earl Lloyd still active, I should say?
No. He left the employ of the Pistons later. He's working for Converse, I think. But I thought he should have been the first black coach in the NBA.
What is your reaction, Bill, to people who say that America has been good to the black athlete?
Well, we can't say that on the air. Of course, the federal communication system wouldn't go for that. I look at it this way. I make a great deal of money playing basketball. I acknowledge that. But it never entered my mind, and couldn't enter your mind either, that someone said, now, here's a nice black athlete, or here's a nice kid, we're going to do something for him. I get paid a lot of money because I'm very good at what I do, and no other reason than that. And you take, for example, in baseball, when Jackie Robinson was brought up to the major leagues, about the Brooklyns, check their attendance before and after Robinson and see if they who done who a favor. I don't think it's a matter of favor anyway. I think it's that I can do something, and people watch me play because I'm very good at it. Or they watch anybody, major league player, play because he's good, not because they like or dislike him. And so nobody's doing anybody any favors, because I know, just like you know in your job, that if you can't do the job, you can say, hey, see you later, because they got no use for you. Nobody, no job has. And this is just the way it goes.
Bill, can...
So this stuff is, well, like I said, we can't say that over the air.
May we talk for just a moment? We've got some calls coming in from Detroit, Michigan, and Atlanta, as well as Brooklyn, New York, but I just wanted to ask one more question before we begin taking our calls. What about the social life? You guys stay together quite a bit. You travel, you crisscross the country during the season. Is there any kind of social exchange between the black and white players outside of the what happens on the basketball court?
Well, it is on our team. But like I said, I don't know how it is on our team. It is on our team. But there's another thing that's involved in the social life. There are some things. There are guys that are friends, I'm sure. But that's their thing. But... and then a lot of guys come from different backgrounds, you know. But I'd say that that we socialize pretty much. We go to with the guys. I go to not as much the last 2 years as I did before. I used to go to parties with them, and we go out together. But this is not a real indication because you take that most of the professional athletes are married. So they go to movies together and things like that. But the real social thing is like, you know, that's a different thing. What I mean by that is if one of the guys is single, well, he does different things on the road than the guys that are married. Now, the white and black guys that are single may go out together, and black and white guys that are married may go out together. But this is what, you know, it's a thing that... And the roommates on our team, the way they were set up last year, because I had the forwards room together, the guards room together, and since I had a room by myself, I had Embry, who was the other center, to room with one of the forwards. So I roomed the guys by position, period.
Is this the normal practice with most pro basketball teams?
Well, see, I can't tell you about most teams because I've only play with the Celtics. I've never played for any other team, see? So, I never get into that anyway because I'm not really that interested in other teams.
Mr. Russell, we're going to depart momentarily for station identification, and then we'll be coming right back, and we'll be accepting some calls from our night call listeners. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Bill Russell after station identification. Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him when he calls. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, color to color, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge, and a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and the white tell it like it is. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Bill Russell about American sports and black athletes. Again, Del Shields.
And we'll accept our first call of the night from Detroit, Michigan. We'll take a call for Mr. Carter, who is hearing Night Call over WJLB. Your question, Mr. Carter.
Yes. My first question was to ask Mr. Russell, what was the shame of the black athletes in sports? And from what I just heard him say, I got a very good point on it. But right now, what I would really like to ask him is, you find just about all sports teams. I'm just 15 years old myself, and you find a lot of prejudice on both sides of races. But see, the big part I see about it as a professional basketball player, as Bill Russell, he finds a lot of publicity, a lot of, newspaper talks and interviews with him. And they ask him, they might not only Bill Russell, because I haven't been familiar with some of the things the newspaper men might ask him, what other black athletes you may find. They ask him, how does it feel toward a certain, racial, throughout the country. Then you find that in that same club is not a president. Then if I believe if a black man was to do something inside of a white club, which is, prejudice, they would bring it out more than would a white person. I like to know what ways are going around, what is being done to bring out this prejudice before the public and tell what people of these clubs, and what players of the clubs that are causing this prejudice in the club.
I don't know if I quite understand your question.
I'd like to know what is being done about the black shame of the black athlete. The shame of the black athlete. I'd like to know what is being done about it.
What is being done about the present situation with black athletes? Yeah. Is this your question? Mr. Russell?
Well, at this point, I don't see very much being done. I think that the guys have, I know that in 1963, I think it was, or 62, I'm not sure, I said that that there was a quota, a number of black players on each team in the National Basketball Association. And a lot of people said that I was, out of order and I was wrong. But I noticed that the following year there were no longer any quotas. Now, I think that any time I see injustice myself, any injustice, no matter how small, and if I'm convinced that it's purely because of race, then I will fight it.
Well,
to me, I must be a man first and foremost, you see. And there's nothing material in this world that I would sell my soul for, you see. Now, what is being done? I don't know. You see, sports and the prejudices are here, because it's, in a sense, you take all of your sports writers, I think they contribute as much as anybody, because I don't know what their thing is, but I know that when it comes to awards and write-ups and publicity, this kind of stuff, I think, and I just think that possibly that any time a player sees anything that he thinks or he's sure is an injustice, he should speak up. But whether this is done or not, I don't know. Because I think that athletes, by nature, are conservative. And, I mean, this is white and black athletes are conservative. The image of the athlete is one who plays the game hard and plays to win and doesn't care about the who's playing against, all this type of stuff, which is not true, but it's an image that has been put forth, and most of the guys try to live by this. But they find that they're whistling in the dark if they try that. But I think it has to come from the owners, I think, and the front offices and stuff. Not only you find certain prejudices with the players, you find it in your front offices. Very rarely are there any black people working in front offices. For example, there are no black people working in front offices of Boston Celtics at this point. I'll admit that the staff is very small, but the fact still remains there are no black people working for the front office of Boston Celtics. And so there are, you know, I think that it has to come from that direction, just like we find that the solutions to the problems in this country, most solutions have to come from big business, from the industries, because they're the people who control everything. And so this is the area which has to be attacked, is the owners and the front offices in sports. And this is not only in professional sports, but it's true in colleges and amateur sports.
Mr. Carter, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. Our next call is Mr. Plummer, who is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM in New York. Your question, Mr. Plummer. I'm sorry, Mr. Plummer has left us. Mr. Gardner is hearing Night Call over WAOK in Atlanta, Georgia. Your question, Mr. Gardner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Russell. George Russell, I should say, and congratulations. My question is this. Are you in accord with Sports Illustrated? I mean, because I was shook, you know, not knowing, due to the fact of inexperiencing, not being a part of. Are you in accord with Sports Illustrated series that it ran on the black athlete?
Well, as far as I could see, I didn't see any lies. Being in accord, what Olson did would relate a series of incidents that happened. I know this was true when I was in college and in professional basketball, and I have, well, I like to think that I have the reputation as being an outspoken man who had said what I thought was right for many, many years. And these very same things, to me, are so familiar because I've said them since, I say, for the last 10 or 12 years. I've said the same type of thing that was happening. And when I said that things like he put in the article, when I said that this was true, everyone else was our black Muslim or something.
Oh, yeah.
You see? And so, you know, it's kind of funny. It's ironic in that, and I say, I see something. And they say, well, he didn't really see it. He's just a Muslim, see?
Oh, yeah.
But the fact is still here, that these things are true. And so I would say that I didn't see anything that I thought was fundamentally untrue.
I see. Well, I just wanted to get someone I would think that I thought that would be, and I'm sure that would be in an authority due to the fact you being a black man, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's an honor to speak with you, and I hope one day that we meet.
Okay.
Good night.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York, the American sports and black athletes is our discussion tonight. And our guest calling in from Los Angeles is Mr. Bill Russell, the player coach of the world champion Boston Celtics. Mr. Russell, as the first black coach, what kind of relationship do you have with other coaches?
Well, I thought they were very, very, well, it's hard to say because it's very superficial. Except for a guy like Bill Sharman, who played with me,
that Boston, who I think is one of the finest human beings I've ever met. And I have a feeling for him. But as for the other coaches, they were always rivals. So there's a line of cordiality, you know, but I don't think that I could say that I was bosom buddies with any of them. But I guess I get along as well as they get along with each other, if you want to say it that way. But I don't think that the coaches have, unless they play together, have anything together. You know, they talk to each other before games and they smile and say good luck when they don't mean it and all this type of stuff, you know. But I guess I get along all right with them, the other coaches.
This is NyCall in New York. Our guest is Mr. Bill Russell. And just a reminder that shortly after 12 midnight, we'll be talking to Mr. Pepper Wilson of the Cincinnati Royals, and we will have an exchange between Mr. Russell and Mr. Wilson on the subject of the front office. Now, Bill Russell, many of these sports writers have written a great deal about you and Mr. Wilt Chamberlain. And there have been times in being a lay fan of the basketball game that there seems to be something deeper than just the normal kind of rivalry. Is this true?
What is that? That's a funny question.
Well, the rivalry between you and Wilt Chamberlain, is it the rivalry of just two excellent performers, or are you and Mr. Chambers friends?
Well, I think of Wilt as my friend. I think he counts me as one of his friends. I think it'd be very silly to have a rivalry of personalities. I know we both play a game, but I know that basketball is not my whole life. It's a part of my life, but it's not my whole life. But I would be awful shallow a person if I would hold a grudge or anything like that against guys that I played against simply because we were rivals. That's sort of silly.
Mr. Hall is standing by in Nashville, Tennessee, hearing NyCall over WVOL. Your question, Mr. Hall.
Well, it's a twofold thing. It's not exactly a question. One is thanking Mr. Russell and other outstanding athletes for being able to articulate the feelings of many of us lesser black people.
And
the very fact that they are in the public light and can command more attention publicly, this makes the fact that we will be heard and the feelings of many black people will be heard. The next is that last night it was mentioned that some other team, and I forget which name, was one of the first teams to break down the interracial barriers between various players, players of different ethnic groups staying with each other. And I do recall last year, when the Celtics were here in Nashville, I believe Sam Jones was rooming with, he was blonde and very Caucasian, and I don't remember his name. So
name was Don
actually, Nelson. I don't have a question.
Well, the player that Sam was rooming with was Don Nelson.
Mm-hmm. And I believe last night it was said that some other team, and they had said this year, that this was the first time in it was just a minor thing, but I know that last year you were here and you did have some interracial rooming here.
Well, to tell you the truth, my first year with the Celtics, I roomed with Jack Nichols, who is now a dentist in Seattle, Washington. And I was the only black player on the team, so, and my roommate definitely wasn't black because there weren't any more black guys around there.
Well, you would definitely have to have had a white roommate.
Right. And
under those circumstances.
And on your first point, you said that I could speak up for lesser black people. There's no such thing.
I don't mean in terms of lesser in terms of accomplishment, but I do mean in terms of just the empathy that you might have to the nation in terms of everyone lacking basketball or just the availability of the news media to you, me speaking, me calling United Press International or AP or some of the outstanding stations and saying, look, I have a press release, might not command any attention, let alone any respect, but you doing so, and this, you can articulate the demands of or the feelings of many of us black folk. This doesn't mean that you feel them any less. I might feel them even more so because I don't get a chance to express them, and I might be very much more intense, but just the fact that you are in this situation and you don't take the bourgeois attitude, well, I haven't made, and I won't speak out. This is the type of thing I was speaking of.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for calling, Mr. Hall.
All right.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Bill Russell, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Bill Russell after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, American Sports and Black Athletes, Part 4, as we continue our week-long special series with Baltimore Orioles star player Frank Robinson. Robinson was the American League's most valuable player in 1966, but he says that title and the other two legs of the Triple Crown he won that year were not all that valuable to him. Certainly not as valuable as they would have been if he were a white player. Robinson says there's still financial segregation at the top of the major leagues, and a lot more of it in the very lucrative field of endorsing products. Speak for yourself direct to Frank Robinson tomorrow night on this nationwide call-in show. And don't forget Friday night's wind-up guest on this special series on American sports and black athletes. He's Harry Edwards, the man who's organizing a black boycott of the Olympics. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Bill Russell about American sports and black athletes. Again, Del Shields.
And welcome to the second half hour of Night Call. Our guest tonight, Bill Russell, the player coach of the Boston Celtics, the first black man to be a boss of a major professional sports team. And our special calling guest tonight is General Manager Pepper Wilson of the Cincinnati Royals. Now, last night's guest on Night Call was Dick Schopp, who has an article called The Revolt of the Black Athletes in the current issue of Look magazine. And in it, Schopp says that each of the major sports has its own particular racial hang-up or problem. He goes on to say that basketball's special problem is that the black athlete so dominates the game that in some towns the white fan seems to be losing interest. The St. Louis Hawks suffered such an attendance slump last year that the owner sold the franchise to an Atlanta group. By frequently starting five black players, the Hawks turned off some fans in St. Louis. Now, our guest, our special calling guest, as I said, is Mr. Wilson, and Mr. Wilson, we'd like to welcome you.
Well, happy to be here with you, Del. I see, and also nice, I guess Bill can hear me, can he?
Yes.
Out there, and he's still got a few hours to go, and it's after midnight, and in Cincinnati we roll up the sidewalks at 10:30, so this is past our bedtime.
Well, Mr. Wilson, the problem that we've just stated in terms of the Hawks fielding, or should, I don't know if we say field in basketball, but placing five men on the court and kind of turning off white fans, is this a definite problem, or is this just a problem that's related to the St. Louis Hawks?
Well, I don't, I'll be honest with you, I don't, it can be a bit of a, it can turn off a few people maybe, but I'll be honest with you, I don't think it's that much of a problem. I don't think that that is the answer. I think there are a number of other things much more important in the St. Louis situation. Quite a few things that were going on down there that had absolutely nothing to do with a racial problem that I think brought about the switch. Frankly, one of the main things I think this last season was that the St. Louis people felt that the Hawks were sort of a lame duck ball club because the previous year Mr. Kerner had sold them ostensibly to an organization in New Orleans, and when that fell through and they had to stay in St. Louis, I think the people felt, well, this ball club wasn't going to be here too long, and it isn't our ball club, and I think that was one of the reasons that perhaps that their attendance and what have you dropped off. I think,
Also, you know, about 3 years ago, we started five black guys when we had William Knowles and Tom Sanders, myself, Sam and Casey Jones, and our attendance didn't bother us.
They like to see good play, and they like to see winners.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that that the true sports fan wants to. I think a lot of this other stuff, you heard Bill say some very profound things, and Bill Russell, frankly, is a pretty warm man, although he may not come across like that to some people, but just like he made a mention about sports writers, and we don't want to make a general indictment of everybody or anything, but sports writers and sports casters, it's pretty simple. If I say Dale Shields is a nice guy, everybody says, well, so what? Nobody pays any attention. If I say Dale Shields is a bum, hey, what's his, what do you do, huh? Who's he? What do you know about him? And this is what sells newspapers and attracts attention to some shows. And not that there aren't plenty of problems that exist. We all know they do. But some of these things get blown up way out of proportion.
Are there any black sports writers working on major newspapers or in the major wire services?
I'm sure that there must be, but, you know, this is a question, frankly, that I think needs to be asked of some of these people. Now, I think the Sports Illustrated article brings out a lot of things that should certainly be put before the public, and I think that they can go a long way towards straightening out and bringing about a better situation for all, so that everybody's treated like a human being. At the same time, I wonder if you check the masthead of Sports Illustrated, how many Negroes are there on their staff, either as writers or in key positions, and the same with your major networks, your radio and TV people. They like to take blasts every now and then, and certainly we all need them, and we're all working for the same thing, but just looking at the top guys who run some of these question programs and what have you, I don't see any Negro people in those jobs, and certainly if they want to start rapping sport and rapping some individuals and what have you, maybe they better take a little look at their own organization first.
That's a little more difficult, Pepper.
Beg your pardon?
That's a little more difficult.
Yes, it is. They got to look in the mirror, and what do I see?
Mr. Wilson, how long have you been general manager at Cincinnati?
Since 1958, about 10 years, I guess, 11 years.
What is your feeling about the revolt of the black athlete in America?
Well, I think you need to, you know, define the revolt a little bit more.
How do you feel about the new militancy that's being expressed by the black athletes?
Well, I think in the case of sincere athletes bringing out some specific things and pushing for some changes, I think it's tremendous. At the same time, I think that a lot of it gets back to an individual who has some personal axe to grind that may be, and his problem may be real or imagined. I think you have to take in the whole. First of all, I think that sports are being blamed a bit for something that the whole country is responsible for. I think the sports have done an awful lot in the field of racial relations. But just like I think you got Frankie Robinson coming on tomorrow night. Now, I know one of his big gripes was that when he was the big star he was looking for some testimonials and endorsements and everything, he didn't get them. Well, I don't think he can blame sports for that. I think that gets back to another part of the American community and society, the people who are advertising business and so forth. I don't think sports gave him the opportunity, and he became a great in the sports field and was fine there, but the sports field itself has nothing to do with who gets testimonials and commercials and so forth and so on.
Well, Pepper?
Yeah.
On that, I think that, first of all, you got sports writers. Now,
right.
For example,
uh-huh.
You know, this last year, when was the last time you read that much about any athletes you read about the Yastrzemski?
That's right, uh-huh.
You understand me?
Right, uh-huh.
Now, this is sports-orientated in that here's a white athlete.
Uh-huh.
He has a good year.
Yeah.
He's had a great year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he becomes a household word.
Right.
You know, and by the same token, a guy like I said, Frank Robinson, I think, had a better year the year before.
Right, yeah, uh-huh.
You know, and his team won the World Series, this kind of stuff.
Right.
And he gets nothing. And I think that sports has to...
You mean the writers didn't give Frankie his just due? Is that what you're going to
ask? Yes.
Uh-huh.
I think that's for one thing. And then the advertising industry.
Uh-huh.
I think you can blame for that a great deal.
Well, that's what I was saying. I think you have to go to the advertising industry more than you do the... When I'm talking about sports, I'm talking about management and the players and the leagues and their people.
more so than the outside. The sports writers, you know darn well, Bill, they're outside of the management realm because we really have our arguments with them from the management side.
Yeah, I know that.
But I think that sometimes there's an indictment of the sports picture that is not justified because sports do not control some of these things.
Mr. Wilson, I know you are involved in professional sports, but I was wondering if you had an opinion about the threatened boycott of the Olympics by black athletes.
Well, this is strictly one man's opinion. It's the way I feel, and I don't ask anybody to accept it unless they want to, unless they analyze it, and I don't try to force it on anybody. But my feeling is this. We do have plenty of problems in this country. But I look on it, it's just like, I know Bill does a team, and you can have your problems in there, but buddy, when you go on the floor, you go on as a team and you play together. And this country is a family, and we're fighting internally like a bunch of cats and dogs in places, and in a family, brothers fight brothers sometimes, sisters argue over who's going to wear what dress, and sometimes the parents maybe show favoritism to one or two of their kids, but you let a neighbor get on the muscle. Or somebody on the outside attack that family or get pushy with that family, and generally that family's going to unite. And they're going to unite to fight that outside group, and they're going to do the best that they can, and then when the thing's over, they're going to get back and fight for the things that they had been arguing about maybe. As far as the Olympics are concerned, I frankly feel that any athlete should participate for the country and for the nation, and give everything. This doesn't mean that he accepts everything that's in it, but I still think, and I think Bill agrees, that this is the greatest nation in the world with all of its faults, and there are plenty of things we have to do to get stuff straightened out. But I do think that if somebody who rejects the Olympics is maybe almost rejecting his entire country, and I don't think these fellows really mean that. They're trying to make a point. They're trying to get it across. I know that. But I think, frankly, that they should be asked to participate, and they make their own decision. But I do think that it'd be better for them and the country, because let's go out and see, win this thing. And I just think that since a lot of these things have been brought out in the open, that they can help their cause. In fact, I say their cause, it's everybody's cause. It's not a Negro or a black cause. It's a white and a black cause. It better be that way, because if we don't work together, we're not going to get anything done.
That's for sure.
Mr. Russell, what is your opinion about the athletes?
Well, if I were an amateur athlete today, and I was asked to participate in the Olympic team, I would not.
You wouldn't go, Bill, huh?
Huh?
You wouldn't go, huh?
No.
Uh-huh. Is it because of the structure of the Olympic organization or something?
Well, I have to admit that I was on an Olympic team once.
Right.
And I have to admit that my judgment is colored, in a sense, by that.
Uh-huh.
But also, you see, I think that at this point, when they the Olympics are, when people recognize the fact found that Olympics are used as political weapons, I think that this thing of dissent, you see, as far as the establishment is concerned, establishment's main function is to perpetuate itself. And there can be no proper dissent that is effective dissent according to the establishment. No matter what you do, that's not the way to do it. That can be a better way. And I think that you have to use what is available for you. Now, the young athletes that are now participating in Olympics have no other thing available to them. Because as the stories of Sports Illustrated have shown, that the people that control sports have no regard for them, really. And so they have no other way to do anything but this way.
Mr. Russell, you stated that possibly your opinion may be a bit colored because you were a member of an Olympic team.
Yes.
Now, am I to interpret that as that meaning that something developed or you had some kind of experience?
Well, you know, you would have to understand, you have to deal with the Amateur Athletic Union and Olympic Committee one time to know what I'm talking about. That has really nothing to do with race.
Mr. Russell and Mr. Wilson, I want to ask you if you'll hold for just a moment. We're going to go off for station identification. We'll be coming right back. Please stay on the line. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Bill Russell after station identification. Next week on Night Call, two Catholic priests, two black artists, a corporation president, and a presidential candidate. This new nationwide call-in show on vital issues continues to bring you the experts with the answers to your direct questions. Monday, Father Bernard Herring, an advisor on moral theology to the late Pope John, on how Catholics and the rest of us should interpret the encyclical on birth control. Tuesday, Robert Hooks and Douglas Turner Ward of the Negro Ensemble Theater. Wednesday, Democratic Senator presidential candidate Eugene McCarthy of Minnesota. Thursday, Westinghouse Broadcasting President Don McGannon on equal opportunity employment. And Friday, Father Santon Kilbride, a Biafran missionary, tells it like it is in the African country where the children are literally being starved to death. All this on the new nationwide call-in show next week on Night Call. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Bill Russell about American sports and black athletes. Again, Del Shields.
And our guest calling in from California, Mr. Bill Russell, and calling in from Cincinnati is Mr. Pepper Wilson, who is the general manager of the Cincinnati Royals. And just before the station break, Mr. Russell was about to tell us about the the Olympic organization.
I wasn't about to say it, but I would have asked Bill this question. If his rejection of the Olympics would be because of the group and the way it is being run as opposed to the way he feels about the entire country. In other words, if we were run a little differently as far as the Olympics are concerned, if he would be, you know, he would play then.
Well, you see, Pepper, The way it's being run, for one thing, has about to do with it.
Yeah. Well, I go along with you completely.
Yeah, because you better have to be in the AAU, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And this is all the different subjects that would take years to go into. But what I mean is this, that all of these injustices that, for example, that were stated in Sports Illustrated
Newsweek,
these are go right down to the core of the AAU and the Olympic Committee.
Uh-huh.
And every now and then they'll say, well, we'll hire a black coach. And it's like, it's insulting.
Uh-huh.
I tell you that if it ever occurred to me that I was offered a job as a coach of Celtics because I was black,
I
think I would have stopped playing basketball right there for something.
Well, I certainly go with you there. But that's what I want to get at is you're not rejecting the country and what have you, even though we got these other problems, but more or less, and you correct me if I'm wrong, it's the way that the Olympics are running and the people are handling them.
Well, that's just part of it, but that's for the...
Well, yeah, I know it's only part of it.
It's not a matter of rejecting the country.
Well, that's a big thing I was getting at. But let me ask you, what do you think, you said that, you know, you need some vehicles in which to protest and so forth and bring things in the open.
Don't you think
that has been done pretty well now?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I'll tell you what happens when you get things, when you are protesting and the establishment agrees that that's a proper protest, then it's an ineffective protest, for one thing.
Now, wait a minute. If somebody agrees with you, then...
I said, if you are protesting against an establishment, the established powers to be, and they say that this is a proper protest, then your protest is ineffective. First of all. Now, second of all, I say that when you protest and demonstrate against a country that is your country,
there's
not necessarily you mean that you reject your country. You're saying that this is my country.
Yeah.
And I want to bring about changes in my country to make my country be the country it can be.
All right, but this is the time your country needs you and you still feel you don't need to answer that need, then, is that right?
How's that?
This is at a time when your country needs you, but, you know, we need the athletes in the Olympics, but you don't feel then that you need to answer that need. You feel that the protest overrides the country's need, is that right?
Well, what you're talking about is what the country needs.
Yeah.
I'm talking about what...
And in other words, I'd like to see this country do well in the Olympics.
They'll do well in the Olympics.
Well, let's hope so.
What do these kids need at this point? These kids are the country, you know.
That's right.
the kids, the black kids and the white kids.
Right.
And these black kids are part of this country.
Well, you're darn right.
And what do they need? You see, this is what they're talking about. What do we need? Does anyone care about, what about us after the Olympic Games? Like Cassius, Muhammad Ali said, when he came back from the Olympic Games in 1960, he went downtown Louisville with a gold medal around his neck, and he couldn't get anything to eat.
Right.
You understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What does he need?
Well, do you think the boycott is going to change that, is what I'm getting at. I mean, the thing we've got to have is some change, is that right?
Right. So how do you change it, then? If you say, see, for many years, black people said that we will go and suffer indignities, and people will see that we are nice people, and we're just like everybody else, and they will change.
Mm-hmm.
And we also found quite a few years ago that this does not work at all.
Well,
we found that the only time people change are when they have to change. And so it stays like this. Now everybody wants to win the Olympics.
Right.
Now they say, well, these guys write things are bad, but that won't help. What will help? No one's saying what will help. What else can these kids do that will change things?
Well, I can't see how them staying out of the Olympics are going to help change anything. I really can't.
Well, I think.
In fact,
it's like this. If they stay out this time.
Yeah.
And we lose the Olympics.
Uh-huh.
By the time the next Olympics come around, maybe we'll have changed enough so that that we want to win the Olympics, and we'll have the guys, that frame of mind, they want to win the Olympics.
Well, you and I are not, we can try and we can work, but we're not going to be able to change a lot of things. No matter what we do, it's going to be have to come up through the young people of all races.
This has been going on in this country for over 100 years since the emancipation of the slaves. If we're saying, well, now this will happen, but it won't happen in our lifetime.
Well, I think an awful lot's already happened in our lifetime. Yeah,
Mr. Wilson, Mr. Russell.
Yes.
I'm happy that you gentlemen are friendly rivals now. One of the reasons for this program is that we do try to create dialogue, and even if we do not agree, at least we can talk. Mr. Wilson, I want to thank you for being with us, and thank you for calling in.
Oh, that's okay.
And by the way, tomorrow night, one of your guys will be with us. Mr. Oscar Robinson will be our special call-in guest tomorrow night.
Get his name right, will you?
I certainly will.
It's Robertson.
Oh, it's Robinson.
Frankie Robinson at all.
Yeah, it's Frankie Robinson and Oscar Robertson. Now, which way are you going here?
Well, let's see. Frankie Robinson will be our guest, and our special call-in guest will be Oscar Robertson.
Oscar.
Are we together? The two R's.
One is Robert, and the other is Rob Ben.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you so much, sir.
Oh, that's quite all right.
Thank you for being with us.
Take care, Bill.
Okay, Pepper.
We'll see you.
All right.
This is NyCall in New York, and standing by in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Mr. Panazio is hearing NyCall over WHAT. Your question, sir, and thank you for being patient.
Thank you. Hello?
Hello.
Is this Delphio?
Yes, it is.
Del, I'd like to ask Bill what type of defense he would use if he was playing the Lakers with Chamberlain, West, and Baylor in at the same time.
Well, I don't know if that has anything to do with the American sports and black athletes.
I can tell them real quickly.
All right. No secrets, though.
Oh, no secrets. Just a few years ago, I forget exactly what year, they had an all-star game in Los Angeles. And on the West team was, the center was Will Chamberlain, the forwards were Bob Pettit and Elgin Baylor, and the guards were Jerry West.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Guy Rogers, I'm not sure. There were Wes Baylor and Chamberlain and Pettit. And the offensive center was Walt Bellamy. And the newspapers predicted that they'd score 200 points. And they almost got 100 points, I think. They just didn't get 100 points. And they lost the game.
All right. Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lewis is hearing Night Call over WJLB in Detroit, Michigan. Your question, Mr. Lewis.
First of all, I'd like to tell you that this call is connect. I didn't think I told your operator that. And also, I'd like to tell Mr. Russell that I'm glad that he took up for the black people the way he did, you know, defending the boycott, because as a common layman and one of the grassroots niggas, you know,
that I see that there's a great need for the boycott, and that, you know, and this way we're showing that the white people that we can stand up and have something to say. And, you know, and I just like to say that I'm glad that you defended it the way you did, because I thought maybe that you were going to agree with that other guy you just got finished talking with, and you know, and say that maybe there isn't a reason for it. But I just like to say, hip, hip, hooray. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Okay.
This is Night Call in New York, and tonight you're laughing, brother.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a good thing in that a number of people are hearing just what your views are. There has been a lot of confusion about the whole problem of the Olympic boycott, and I kind of think you subscribe to what the late Dr. King once said. He says, "I criticize America only because I love her," and I think that the stand that many of the black athletes are taking today are certainly encouraging to most of the younger people, because it's giving them a chance to see that the athletes are human beings. Do you get a chance much, Bill, to do anything with youngsters?
Well, you see, it's like this. I have this funny thing about youngsters. I think they are sometimes very nice. I have three children myself, and these are the only children I get involved with, because I don't feel I'm the parent to any other people's children. And I think that if every one of us were to say that I am going to try to be the example I want my children to follow, then they don't have to say, be like somebody else to be like somebody else. And I feel my responsibility is to my children. And I never presume that I have lived such a life, such a good life, a perfect life, that I can tell kids that they should live like me. Or to go into, you know, like say, like a lot of so-called athletes go into ghetto areas and tell the guys, like, you know, go in there to make speeches and things. I say that if I am in, say, a Watts or Harlem, it's because I got something going there. I would never presume that I'm going to go leave, say, Boston and go into Harlem and tell the kids how to act, because I just don't think that I can do that. I think that I have to do what I think is right. And like I said before, I have a responsibility to my three children to set example for them at home. And I think that if every parent in America, black and white, tried that, then you'd have a different case. I mean, I try to be honest with my children and say, and try to eliminate false values and be a hypocrite. I try to avoid that around my children, see.
Mr. Russell, I want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call, and we certainly wish you the very best.
Thank you.
This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, American Sports and Black Athletes, Part 4. Superstar Frank Robinson of the Baltimore Orioles. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.